Welcome everybody to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. Today we are joined by two international guests, Martina Di Ridolfo from the European Trade Union Committee for Education, that's ETUCE, and Jasper Hollem from Denmark. And Jasper works for the Teacher Trade Union in Denmark. So I hope I've pronounced the names properly. Being an Irishman, that's always a challenge, Martina. So I would like to start with you. We know each other a long time, but I'd like you to introduce yourself and the work you're doing, and maybe to just get us started a little bit on the work you're doing in the area of AI.
Thank you so much, Michael. And first of all, thank you a lot for the invitation. I was a listener myself of this podcast, so thinking that I will be now recording this podcast is really like an honor for me. So my name is Martina Di Ridolfo, and I work at ETUCE, which is an acronym standing for European Trade Union Committee for Education. What this organization is, it's an umbrella organization bringing together under 23 education trade unions from across Europe. We cover the European region, so not only the EU, but also EFTA countries and countries from Eastern Europe and Central Asia, so a total of 49 countries at the moment. And what we do is to represent the collective interests of teachers, academics, researchers, educational personnel at all levels of education towards European institutions. But we also have a role of fostering the capacity building of our members. In my case, I work on topics relating to digitalization, AI, and occupational health and safety. And we started working on these topics since, I think, 1 year before I joined ETUCE, and that was in 2020. And that's when we met, actually, Michael, with this project at the time, eSpeed, in the middle of the pandemic.
That's right.
And since then, so many things have happened. And so we're actually, AI has become one of the two core areas of our work. So we do a lot of policy work on AI, meaning advocacy towards European institutions. But also, we are at the moment implementing a project co-funded by the EU called Balancing AI in Education. And with this project, we are basically looking at two main areas. The first one is advocacy and how education trade unions are doing advocacy on AI. What are the national policies and regulations that are being developed in the sector, and the degree of involvement of education trade unions? So to what extent they are around the table, but also going back to the very core, interrogating ourselves as a movement on what AI entails for education and therefore what should be our demands. And on the other side, we are also looking at more core labor rights and therefore how unions are currently negotiating on AI, if they engaged in any collective bargaining or social dialogue initiatives. And we started a year ago, and I think everybody feels we would need at least a few years to figure this all out. And most probably by the end of the 2 years, we will have more questions than answers. But yeah, if you want, I can go a bit more deeper during our conversation.
Brilliant. Yeah, so I think that gives people a good sense of where you're coming from. And actually, I had forgotten about eSpeed, would you believe? And actually, Jasper, we actually worked with schools, secondary schools in Denmark at the time. So Jasper, you and I have met a couple of times at this stage. We always have great conversations. So tell everybody who you are. You've a very interesting track record, as we say in Ireland, and tell us who you are and what you're about.
Yes, first of all, Michael, thank you so much for the invitation to join this podcast. My name is Jasper Holm, and I work as an education policy specialist at the Danish Upper Secondary Teachers Union, and it's called GL, and it's short for Gymnasieskolen is Lærerforening in Danish, and it's situated here in Denmark. Before that, I was a teacher and later a vice principal at a Danish upper secondary school. Right now, my job is to inform our leadership about the development of Gen AI in the field of education. I mean, so they can take measures and propose adequate policies to the benefit of teachers and to the overall quality of the level of education that we present here. But it's also to stay informed about Gen AI. And Michael, you know, it's like trying to unfold an umbrella in a storm. It's so difficult. I mean, it gets easily out of hand, I would say. But I work locally with our ministry and other unions here in Denmark. and also internationally with Education International and also with ETUCE. And I work together with Martina on the Balancing AI project. Right now, I think the most important thing in regards to Gen AI is to defend the quality of our education. There is no sort of shortcut to quality here. And Gen AI, as it is presented to us at this moment in the form of chatbots, is absolutely not a shortcut to quality education.
So there's a lot of big questions that both of you have introduced there. And I'm going to stick with Jasper Martina just for a moment, because he's mentioned a couple of things there and he's brought us straight into the world of generative AI. And Jasper, policy development. We chatted about this previously, and the union, your union, has been involved. Tell us more on that. What's happening in Denmark around policy and guidelines, and how are you working together with other stakeholders?
Well, right now at the moment, we are sort of from where we took off, the two of us, Michael, a few months back, we have moved forward from there. And if we just go back, I would say we've had a lot of social dialogue with our ministry. And we've tried to sort of raise a flag about, to plant the idea that Gen AI may not be that interesting when it comes to education and quality. So the guidelines were actually developed between different stakeholders. But I would say we had a fairly good sort of part of it. And I remember I did sort of a comparison analysis when we were in Brussels in February. And actually, ChatGPT said that there were very big similarities between what we came out with from my union and what the ministry ended up coming out with. So I think you could say that we succeeded in actually having a really good dialogue here. But fast forward to this fall, we've been in dialogue with the ministry about actually getting evidence about, nice, does AI actually, can you say, improve the learning outcome? Or is it actually working in the opposite direction? So we've launched four different projects, and we're looking at, you know, different situations and written assignments, but very specific. And then we managed to convince the ministry that we should have follow-up research on this project, on all four of them, actually. And these researchers are independent, and they will come up with a final report, you know, with key findings and recommendations. I have a really good feeling about this, because we need evidence and we need to base our further discussions on research, not on sort of these airy promises from the big tech. We need to know and we need to see what is actually happening.
And yeah, totally agree. And I'm going to come back to Martina, because I know, Martina, evidence and is very important for you also. And I imagine that Balancing AI project, which sounds very interesting, and I know that you had your midterm conference in Copenhagen, of all places, about 3 weeks ago. What are the discussions that are coming out of that project, particularly, I suppose, in relation to generative AI, and what impact is it having on education and on the work of teachers in the main? And I know, as you said in your introduction, ETUCE is working in higher ed as well, but I think our audience is more in the school sector. So what's emerging on your side? And I want then to go back to Jasper to hear about his evidence also.
So when it comes to Gen AI, I think we have seen at least a big shift. So before the release of ChatGPT, when unions, and for the experience that we had also in a series of working group at the European level, I feel that this is pretty similar to what happened at the Ministry of Education level. So before the release of ChatGPT, there was this sense that, you know, Gen AI, well, first Gen AI was not a thing, but in general, that AI was an issue for only countries that could afford having these kind of conversations, where, you know, there were other countries in Europe where accessibility and more basic issues were at the core of the policymaking. Whereas after the release of ChatGPT, we are now into a new sense, and that I would define a sense of urgency. And this sense of urgency is that AI is already here and is here to stay, and that we are lagging behind. I personally feel that, you know, sense of not being able to keep up with all the developments that are outside there with AI, I feel it myself. But I think that when it comes to education, we have to dare taking it step by step, because there is no positive outcomes from rushed decisions. And I think that when I think of also the new strategy that the European Commission has launched just a couple of weeks ago, Apply AI strategy, there is also a political willingness of having an uptake of AI in all sectors, including education. And Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the EU Commission, presented this new principle called AI first. And what she said is that whenever a company or a public office has a new issue, they have to ask themselves, how can AI help? And I quote her on this. She says, when AI is in the loop, we reach better solutions. So actually, what came out of our conference in Copenhagen is that we want a needs-based approach to AI. We don't have all the answers because we are kind of unpacking what are the implications of AI, not just on it. So there is the macro dimension of education. Then there is the dimension of teachers. Then there is the dimension of students and teachers. And as a European federation, a trade union federation for the education sector, we have trickier tasks than other federations in other sectors that are only looking at the labor aspect, because we're also trying to figure out what is the professional impact, the pedagogical impact. So when thinking about the students, and we have been talking a lot about critical thinking, critical approach to AI, I think that there are first some old competencies that are becoming more important than they used to be until generative AI. And I think in particular about writing autonomously or reading and understanding and therefore writing. So all these skills were considered and are still considered basic skills. And the tendency that we see now with the impact of generative AI is that these competencies can actually become elite competencies. So this is just, you know, one side of the spectrum. I think that nowadays, especially for students, there are also some new competencies that are becoming more important than ever. For instance, distinguishing what is AI generated and what is not AI generated. And our students and pupils spend a lot of time on social media, and they are more and more exposed to generative AI created content, and the whole debate around fake news here becomes even more important, right? So yeah, there are old things that are becoming more important, but also new things emerging.
Yeah. And I want to go back to Jasper to get a reaction from him on this as well. I think from listening to what you've said there and going back to the AI first and how can AI help? Yes, I mean, it seems to me that we in education, and particularly teachers, Jasper, we need to have quite a high level of knowledge, professional knowledge, let's call it that, to actually make those informed decisions. And that requires a very highly competent and confident, I think confidence also needs to be in here, not just being competent. And let's remember that there are three elements of competency. There's knowledge, skills, and attitude. And attitude often gets lost in here. So what do you think about this? Where are we going? And what are your views on, and even the research that you're doing? I know it's early doors, but is there any evidence coming out that could help Martina and the rest of us make these decisions?
Well, I think it's way too early to talk about any hard evidence. I mean, but they will come up, these full projects are running through the next 3 years, and there will be an annual sort of report to catch up if there are any results that we should take into reconsideration in the following year. And I mean, the thing is, when we talk about all this AI stuff and in the classroom, it's like we forget that the teachers, they're actually sort of the experts in the classroom. And we should be asked, I mean, what kind of tools that would be of any help in the classroom. To me, it's as simple as that. And in a way, we're actually asking all the wrong questions. I mean, Martina is also talking about It's very difficult actually to get a sort of understand the whole AI thing. It's like people are always saying, oh, how about this? How about this new thing? Michael, you're talking about how to become critical users. And I would say, well, I mean, because the Gen AI that are presented to us at the moment is flawed. That's why we have to become critical users. So in a way, the question is wrong because we should say, do we really need generative AI in our classrooms to learn anything?
Yes.
And I don't think so. I would like to give a sort of a small example here. You talked about assessment also, and we have this little sort of, I would like to give you sort of a little story here about some of the issues. It might look a bit old-fashioned what I'm going to say, but this little history from Denmark. We've long experimented in Denmark with the use of digital technologies in our teaching. And I think it's been going on for the last 20 years or so. And that means computers have been fairly common in the classroom. And because of that, we have designed our tests and high-stakes exams around the use of computers and the internet. But somehow the teachers actually reported a lot of problems with this, and the students did not become any better by the use of computers. And actually, they become sort of, they lack quite a lot of skills. And with the emergence of generative AI, they actually said, oh, now it's completely sort of out of hand. There is a rise in cheating, and especially in the subjects like foreign languages. So actually, the ministry, they decided to test new formats of written exams. Same duration, but no computer. And which is basically to say that was back to pen and paper. And a few days ago, I just learned about the results from these tests. And the students actually outperformed those students who used computers. So, I mean, somehow we've forgotten about the things that actually work. A lot of things we know. And the teachers are the experts. And we could have saved a lot of money that could have been used on quality teacher education and quality schools instead of running, chasing, you know, technology.
So maybe I'll come back on that to you both. I'm reading a lot on this at the moment. I'm involved in a couple of projects myself with colleagues here in Ireland in the area of AI and generative AI. I mean, we have a large policy experimentation called AIDL, which is looking at how can we better develop the data literacy of both teachers and students when they're using these tools. And I think, Jasper, I would agree. I mean, we've had this before. I think you're underplaying Denmark's digital education history. I would say it goes back 30 years because I'm a little older than you. And I know that I was dealing with colleagues in Denmark on these issues 30 years ago. And people who know me, I am a bit of a history of education buff. And we have a long history here. And sometimes we forget. But I'm just thinking, you mentioned critical use. I mean, let's face it, ChatGPT, it was not invented for education. You know, we all know that. It's being used by teachers across the globe. And as always, teachers are finding ways to use this technology, even though it wasn't developed for them, to help them. And that's always been the case. We've done that over the years, over the decades. I mean, I think the history of digital in education in schools is at least 50 years old. But these tools are not really addressing the issues we have in our classrooms or that our teachers are experiencing at the moment. Some of them might be a little bit, I'm thinking of time, okay? So time is a real challenge for teachers. You mentioned assessment. I was reading a document this morning, and I will put it in the chat notes, from Edutopia. I mean, teachers, saving time for corrections is all, it's kind of utopia for all of us as teachers. But I think it's really interesting that the tools that we have, they have not been developed for us, but we're taking them in. And I know other colleagues across Europe have said, look, you know, we almost need a whitelist of the tools. Martina, what are your thoughts on this? Because I think we're expecting teachers to do an awful lot, as always. You know, we're expecting them to make a judgment about the tool, whether it's safe, whether it's legal, etc. And then how we can use it in our classrooms.
I think, Michael, you're touching a very important point here on the fact that, you know, most of the tools that are, whose use is overspread in education are not AI tools that are meant and taught for education. And that's where I come back from the needs-based approach, because if you adopt a needs-based approach, you start from the classroom and then you think of how you develop when you look for a tool. Whereas here, we have a flip system for which we start from the tool And then we are asked to think how we can embed the tool in the classroom. So the overall thinking is totally shifted. And I mean, I think there are enough data showing that the biggest platformization of education happened during COVID. I mean, some schools were not even using digital tools before. And now there are some, I mean, all these platforms are now embedded with AI-based features. And most of them are actually generative AI features. And also, I mean, maybe this could be a topic for another podcast, but what does AI mean in itself? I mean, with generative AI, it's pretty straightforward. You are using AI to generate things. But I see a lot of platforms that are offering AI-powered, AI-enabled features, and you don't even know what they're talking about. But what was interesting was that the last summer, we have conducted a little scouting among members to find out what were the tools that were most used, AI tools that were most used in education, and also if they were high risk or not. This was a consultation from the AI Act high risk consultation. And we're looking at the list that we got of tools that are most used in secondary education. All tools focus on assessment and class preparation and providing feedback to students. Now, I think one key action to do here is to understand how we are using these tools. And most of the use that I've seen so far have been basically centered on externalizing some teachers' tasks. Grading is very time-consuming, it's boring, so let's externalize it to a generative AI tool that generates the feedback for you. So one key action and step that I think every education institution or classroom and teacher need to ask themselves is, what are our main tasks? And this was also one of the conversations that we were having throughout our project activities. Do not externalize your core tasks. We see very few, or at least not consistent, examples of generative AI using as a way to foster creativity, to actually empower the teachers and the students. And the reason why I think this is not being widespread is that this goes against the main principle that is being sold behind generative AI, and is generative AI will save your time. And this is really an efficiency trap, which will not benefit the quality of education. It might be worthwhile exploring in other, you know, business sector, but that's definitely something that doesn't work for quality education.
Yeah, so you've touched on, as I was listening to you there, you know, assessment, lesson feedback to students and creating materials, content development. And you and I have been working together on the digital education content guidelines, which will be published sometime in the new year. So that word efficiency, I mean, it was never really a word I used when I was teaching myself. You know, my best teachers weren't the most efficient. I wouldn't have said they were the most efficient. They were probably the ones who were the most interesting, and they were the ones who really got me interested and loved learning when I was with them. So Jasper, I'm thinking there as well, you've talked about there's a history of tools that we use in the classroom. I'm just noticing the people who are listening to us can't see us, but the three of us have technologies in front of us. We have these things called pens, and we also have paper, which are all technologies, let's not forget, in our classrooms. And every day, teachers are making decisions about what they're designing learning tasks. They are designing learning spaces. They are thinking about their context. And I'm sure many of them that are listening to us are also thinking about generative AI. And they are wishing that they had tools that were more appropriate to their needs. But talk to me a little bit about this notion about how can we help them? I mean, teacher unions have had a history. My own work in this area started with the Irish National Teachers Organization, the INTO, in the early 90s in the relation to the work of the internet. So how can we help teachers, support them so that they can make better decisions, that they can make more informed decisions in relation to these technologies and specifically generative AI? We're having this discussion on the 31st of October, 2025. This is the game in town at the moment. What do you think, Jasper? What do they need? How can we help them? Because there's all sorts of other things coming down the track. AI literacy, PISA, the EU AI Act has things in there about AI literacy. So what can we do to help teachers without frightening them and without deprofessionalizing them so that they do feel that they are in control and that they, in their classrooms or in their schools, collectively can make decisions in relation to generative AI?
That's a very small question. It's very easily answered. I think I would go about saying that, first of all, it takes teacher involvement. I mean, they have to be part of the process. You cannot talk about how can we help them without asking them what kind of help do you need. And first of all, I think it's very important to say, I mean, we have to look at professional autonomy here. I mean, you should be able to say, no, I'm not interested in using AI in my classroom because the way I teach, I actually prefer to go another way around. We talk about human agency, professional autonomy and all that. And I fear that if we sort of take generative AI into the classroom, the teachers will end up sort of following instructions from a machine. Who's actually in charge here? I'm just asking. And I think to a certain degree, we should be asking how much technology can you add to the teaching profession before it's no longer a profession? Or I might say, how much water can you add to a glass of whiskey before it's no longer whiskey?
Can I come back to you a little on that? I mean, I totally agree with you on this, right? I mean, I've been long saying this. If a teacher decides they're not using digital technologies in general, and if they can articulate why, I've no issue with it. You see, I think there's some people have this notion that there's a magic formula, and that you should use it there. I mean, you've used the word, I don't know how many times you used it, but you've used it more than once, professional and professionalism. And that to me is about trust.
It is, definitely. I mean, I can say what we have here in Denmark. We have a high level of trust from the ministry to our teachers. And at the same time, we trust the ministry not to take any irrational decisions about what we're doing. We need to have a conversation and we need to talk about what do we actually want? What kind of result do we want? What kind of educational system do we want? We have to have this discussion. And this is actually, I mean, Michael, we had a talk before where you said, what are the positive things and what are the negative things? It's quite easy to come up with a very long list of negative things. But on the positive side, I think that Gen AI is actually forcing us to reconsider the fundamental pillars of our education. We have to have this conversation what does it mean to learn?
Correct.
What does it mean to teach? How can we make sure that humans control the machines and not the other way around? How can we make sure that the AI tools used in education are developed to fit the needs of education and society? And right now, it's actually the other way around. Education systems are bending towards technology.
We're reacting. We're reacting.
Exactly. And told to do that. And there is this confusion everywhere. People don't know which direction to look. And I actually said, please just sit down and wait for the fog to disappear. And you will be able to see clearly again.
And Martina made a similar point earlier. She spoke about slowing things down. And I mean, this fear of rushing. And when we rush, we make mistakes. But Martina, what are your thoughts on this? I think Jasper has, in the last 5 minutes of the podcast, has opened the can of worms. We'll have to come back to these big questions. But to nail my own colours to the door or the mast, I'm in total agreement. I think we've moved well beyond, give me the list of generative AI tools that you're using in your classroom. And I'm hearing this from all sorts of organisations, OECD, UNESCO, the European Commission, Council of Europe. Everybody is asking these questions. What is the purpose of education? What is learning? What is teaching? What is the role of the teacher? What is the role of the learner? But what are your thoughts?
That's a very essential question, Michael. And I think that, I mean, I've been saying this in many meetings where we already met each other. The whole purpose of education hasn't changed. And humanity has already made a fantastic exercise when drawing up international covenants and conventions that have been ratified by, I think, almost all states in the world about the right to education and the purpose of education. I mean, after all, even in the so-called age of AI, the whole purpose of education is to enable the full development of the human personality, of the cognitive capability and social capabilities. So, however, I do agree with Jasper that Gen AI is redefining, you know, how this purpose translates into practice. What are the shapes that it's taking concretely? And I think we haven't interrogated ourselves enough concretely. And that answer is actually not a universal answer, but that's an answer that can vary depending on the context, on the countries, on the single school, and sometimes on the single teachers or students. But that's an important process of reflection that all our unions, policymakers, and teachers should do. So Jasper was mentioning professional autonomy, and this is, I think, one of the main features characterizing our profession compared to other professions. I think the exercising their autonomy and agency also requires a good training. And when I say training, I don't mean just teaching our teachers how to use this tool and what are the outcomes you can have out of the tool, but really interrogating themselves on the needs that they have and how they can use generative AI to actually make the best reply and address their needs. But this requires time. It's an essential condition. Good training requires time. And I was really struck, to be honest, by the latest results of TALIS, this big survey that is conducted by the OECD on teachers. And TALIS is showing that 3 in 4 teachers say they don't have the skills to teach with AI. And half of the teachers who took part in TALIS think that we should not use AI in teaching.
Yes.
So I think we are also in front of a big unknown block that for teacher, it seems very difficult to unpack. And I think so far, the narrative has also been led by the specialists that were not coming from the education sector, but coming from the tech sector.
And teachers, computer science.
And teachers feel that they don't have the right expertise, they are not
Correct.
Entitled or not expert enough to talk. And
yes.
I'm always trying to say to them, I mean, you are actually the expert. This is not about technology, but this is about education first. And technology is just another instrument. I mean, today is generative AI. In 20 years, we will be talking about something different.
I'm going to finish on that because I think this has been really interesting conversation. And I know both of you, we've chatted about this. I mean, I mentioned it earlier. There's a history here. If anybody wants to read about this and look back, you know, there's a wonderful book. It's called Teachers and Machines. And it was written by Larry Cuban, formerly of Stanford. He's a wonderful writer in this area. Pat will put it in the show notes for this. And I think it comes back to what we've been talking about in this podcast is that we in education, we, the teachers, the school leaders, the policymakers, etc., we need to really start to sit down together. Slow down, I think, is the first thing we need to. There's no mad rush here. And that we need to really start to have a really honest, that word again, critical discussion about what we want education to look like, how we can design education and particularly schooling for our young people so that it's relevant to their lives. But that's not an easy task. And you mentioned training, Martina. I have a colleague who prefers to use the term professional learning. But I hear what you're saying. But I think that that professional learning needs to develop that criticality piece, that we as teachers, we are professionals, we are able to look at this. I love the title of your project, Balancing AI. It's about balance. It's not going too far one way or too far the other way, which we tend to be doing in a lot of areas of our lives at the moment. But it's going into that middle, and it's about respectfully discussing, debating what we're doing and how we're doing it. I know it's not going to be a simple answer, but we need to give people time because when we rush, we make mistakes. And I will leave it there because I think there is so much here that we would love to go back and revisit. And I look forward to meeting you soon in person, but also to bringing you back in 2026 for a follow-on conversation. But I want to thank you both this morning for making time to join with me and Pat here on this podcast. And it's been an absolute pleasure from my end. Thank you both.
Thank you to you, Michael.
It was a pleasure.